So welcome everyone to another special episode of Brainstorm Brewery. We're here at episode 130 something.
Is it really? We're frankly lost without Corbin making the show notes. This could be episode like 240 and some of you listening, you're like, what does Corbin actually do? That's what he does. He keeps us informed with what we're going to talk about, what episode it is, and then he repeats some of the things I say.
He's more like the mortar to the bricks. Like, you know, we provide the strength and the foundation
That's a lot of credit to Corbin.
Well, I mean, think about it.
I would be okay giving Corbin that credit if he can remember when we started our podcast that we've been doing for 2.5 years. I'm sorry.
Oh. Corbin and I both like to troll Marcel.
We're starting
at 10, and then either Corbin and I will invariably say, what time zone? Because Marcel's like, we've been doing the same fucking time zone since we started the podcast. It's really funny to us.
You guys aren't trolling. You guys are seriously –
No,
guys
Corbin's asking in all seriousness. No trolling.
No, he could be lost. Yeah, that's a real possibility.
He's certainly lost. Speaking of what's lost, I think we've lost track. Where do we want to go with this podcast, boys? We haven't done this in 2 weeks. It's crazy. I missed you guys.
Oh, shit. Speaking of Corbin, he just pops up like fucking Boogeyman.
Oh, so, look at that. Here he comes.
Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Yeah, we said his name way too many times. B-dubs in hand, Corbin calls.
B-dub juice, B-dub juice,
B-dub juice. Shut up, Corbin. All right, is that going to make you appear now?
Yeah, I'm here, guys. I don't have B-dubs, though I wish I did. Instead, all I have is this delicious Boulevard Wheat beer.
Oh,
whoa. Did that sound like an advertisement for Boulevard Wheat because it's delicious?
I mean, it is. I'm actually drinking liquor tonight, so I'd like to say something cool about beer. I actually drank a short soft parade all night at the club, so three cheers for Shorts. That's a local Michigan brewery. Some of our listeners will recognize the name Shorts. Yeah, it was a good time.
I recognize that they should be sponsoring us for that advertisement we gave them.
Yeah, well, I'll run it by them.
Okay. Now, you know, now that I'm here, though, I do have something to brag about, and it's pretty big news.
Whoa, what happened to your voice? You changed.
Yeah, well, we got serious because I have to brag about something real quick, so we needed to needed to get the good audio going.
Talk about clearing your throat. Damn, okay.
Wow. I attended a League of Legends tournament last week. And I won, guys. We won that thing. Just saying. Got my humble brags out of the way.
Did you play Teemo?
How much did you win?
I know you like to play.
Well, we did not win a lot of cash. However, we won the Triumphant Rise skin, which you can only get from winning a Riot sponsor tournament. So yeah. I think that probably counts for infinite.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, obviously, you go to tournaments, local tournaments, you're not going to win a lot of money. But, like, there were 11 teams there, and we soundly crushed everybody. So it was a lot of fun.
Is this in the bronze tier?
This was gold and lower, only we actually caused quite a bit of rage because the cutoff for the ranks was the end of last season, which was like 3 months ago. But since that time, we were all gold then. Since that time, two of us have got to platinum. So people were complaining of us cheating.
Well, because you're plat now, but you were gold at the cutoff time?
Well, yeah. And technically, I was plat before the cutoff
time.
But then I dropped to plat. I dropped to gold before it, though not on purpose.
Banned.
No. Like, I had a bunch of lag problems, and I tried to play.
Yeah, you were raging
work.
On your mic.
No,
whatever.
You tell us you were raging. You got banned.
No, that didn't happen. I mean, that did happen. So I was going at the end of the season. So it was all completely, like, legit on our end. But I can see how it looked bad, because right now our ADC is in plat 2, and he got 2 pentakills in the tournament.
So
you're saying if you were to play a modern event with blue red Delver and you happen to win the event, that, you know, technically because it was legal, it's okay because you're able to play with
It's like,
I mean, we broke
the,
no rules.
What happened was the tournament's like, oh, people with that planeswalker points level 40 or below, and then they made new accounts essentially.
But we didn't. Like, that's what smurfing actually is. Like, We were all legitimately within the rules.
We all know, Corbin.
Yeah, it's just the technicalities. The technicalities happened to work in our favor, although it was completely unintentional on our part. And then we destroyed everybody, and they all got really salty about it.
It's okay. We're just going to call you a scumbag. You know, scumbag Corbin, send all your hate mail. Tell Corbin that he needs to step his game up and go play against some big boys. Instead of, going to the little
kids. There's a challenger player in Oklahoma. How am I supposed to compete with that?
Wow, they're really?
Yes. The dude is like absurdly good. His team, there's an uncapped tournament in a couple weeks that he's going to be in. He plays mid lane. I play mid lane. Now, what am I supposed to do? Go play against a challenger?
All right. I don't know. Challenger, mid lane. Okay. Now we're getting into this technological, get out of this terminology. Let's get into some magic.
Why did we let him start? We're going.
League of Legends is done. Okay. We're
going to
talk about my magic experience. I went to GP San Jose. Yeah, that's the last time that we podcast.
Did you play a cube deck?
Oh, no, I didn't play a cube deck that time.
That was forever ago.
Yeah, no, I was as a team sealed. I got to play with Raider Rob and Robert. Rob put out there that he didn't have a team, and I was looking for a team, and so that, the stars aligned, and we made it happen. We played, had a good time. Didn't do too great, but it was their first GP, and it was a lot of fun. Some really cool decks, so... I love Team Sealed. Team Sealed is a
great first GP. That's a great experience.
Yeah, some really awesome stuff. I kind of got a little scumbagged. I feel this one guy was playing so slow that I could have won, but we ended up with a draw, and I kept telling him to speed it up. But other than that, it was a good...
call a judge on that shit, man.
Well, that's like one of the most iffy areas to try to, if you're not familiar with tournaments, to try to know what the line is between... when do I call a judge of my opponent and how do I get them to play faster? Because losing game, like drawing games to time because your opponent took twice as long as you in a match is really frustrating, but it's a hard line to walk.
Yeah. I mean, there's one point where he took a minute to figure out his play. Okay. I can understand this stuff. So he made his play. He drew his card and he played a land. So that was his card. And he went back to thinking into his deck. I was just like, no. You're supposed to have your lines already that out and played, so I don't know.
And then I've done it before and called judges over and say, I always phrase it as, please watch both of us because I want this match to finish and I don't want either of us to go too long. Sometimes judges don't do a very good job taking into account the board state, and they want you to make a play in 20 seconds when this is the only turn of the match. You need 60 seconds to make a decision, So, like, it's just a very difficult situation to be around.
Yeah, it is what it is, though. So. It wasn't too bad. It didn't kill the experience. It was just a small blip in it. But overall, it was fun. Saw a lot of people there. I can't remember all the names right now. I got to go look through the Twitter to find it. Sorry, everybody. This was 2 weeks ago.
Marcel doesn't care about you.
No. There's a lot of people. There's some young people, too. Like, we got young fans. When you got young fans, you're doing something, Because if you're the old fogies like we are in Magic, we're a dying generation. But if you got the youth, and the youth believe in you, that's when you know that you're doing something good.
We got young fans because we're edgy and we say the F word.
Yeah, I just prefer not to think about how long we've been doing this or how long I've been writing articles or any of that stuff that makes me feel old.
May 2016 will be my 20-year anniversary of playing Magic.
Oh, really? Well, I've only played Magic for like 6.5, 7 years, but I'm going on like 5 years writing, and that just feels weird.
My 20-year has to be like a year after Jason's, I'm pretty sure.
I thought you played in Antiquities or something.
Yeah, I mean, I bought my first pack in Antiquities. Is that 20 years ago?
That's
Dude, Antiquities was 94. That's 21 years ago.
Oh man.
No.
Yeah, I started in 4th edition.
I thought Antiquities was 96.
Oh yeah, you're right. I was like 5 or 6 years old.
I started during Revised.
But like, I didn't play Magic. That doesn't count. Like, I'm gonna count it. Like, my 20 years is really gonna be like when I turned 10, and I was actually, cause like, I had Magic cards from like 6 to 10, but I had some Magic cards. That was the extent of it.
You guys make me feel a lot younger since I started in, Shards of Alara.
Because everyone knows that your age is dependent on when you started playing Magic and not when you were born.
Yeah.
Exactly. Corbin.
Yeah, I was 6 when I started. That was how I made 20 years, Corbin.
It doesn't help.
And you put those two together to get my age.
Older than me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not that much older than you.
Ryan, Ryan might actually be a little. Jason and Marcel are old, though. I can make fun of you guys.
Yeah, we are old, actually. I'm definitely old.
Marcel's over 30. Jason's over 30, so yeah.
I'm over 30 to the extent that I'm 30.
Yeah, that's over 30.
He's not wrong.
It's not my 30th birthday, so yeah, I'm over 30.
Yes.
See, when
that's how that works.
I was watching this movie. You guys ever seen the movie Menace to Society?
Oh yeah, no. Dude, with Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yes, that was it's a great movie. It's a gangster movie from way back then, but I remember when I was a kid, watching the movie, like, you know, the actors, they were like a generation above me. So they were like intimidating and, you know, just like it was a whole, they were definitely like, you know, superior or authorities, you could almost say. And then I remember watching it recently. I was looking at the movie, I was like, man, who are these little young punks thinking they're badasses? And I was just like, you know.
Wait, was Cuba Gooding Jr. Boys in the Hood or Menace to Society? I've seen both movies like 5 times.
That was Boys in the Hood, I believe.
Yeah, with Lawrence Fishburne and shit, yeah. That was Boys in the Hood, yeah. I've seen them both a lot. I don't know why, I'm so like white and suburban, I'm like, oh, look at him. Oh no, a drive-by, it affects all of us.
I'll tell you the thing that made me feel old actually today was looking at how many different magic finance sites there are and how many writers there are. And I guess this will actually bring us back to, you know, something we know about. But it feels like not long ago when I started writing and there was exactly one site on the internet and two financial writers, like, and it's crazy.
There are like 5 sites. Like it's not a big thing.
I mean, it is when like, I just think of, it just feels like not long ago when there was literally one.
Yeah, so. You know, I'm glad a few of these sites have cropped up because every new site has given us like 2 or 3 really solid writers.
Yeah, for sure.
I really like Saffron Olive over at Goldfish. I like Travis Allen and Jared Yost on MTG Price. And I really like everybody that writes on Brainstorm Brewery.
Well, yeah, I actually like several of the writers on, and his name does escape me. It's, I don't want to mispronounce it because it's kind of, it's, starts with a G, I believe. Writes over at MTG Price. It's really good stuff. And I know he listens to the cast, so shout out to all of you over there, even though I don't want to embarrass myself by butchering your name. No, but yeah, it's just really cool to see it all came up and actually weird to be like, oh, you know, it's like we're the old guys here because, you know, we've seen it all kind of rise.
Hey, well, the old guys get taken out by the new guys.
Yeah, if you've been at this for 2 years, you're a veteran. It's just cool. I mean, I don't know. Some of the guys have been at it even longer than me, like Sigmund Ausfresser. I read every one of his articles with bated breath. You know, there's a lot of good guys in QS too that have been at this like even longer than I have. So
I think I've got you all beat. It's like my little claim to fame here.
Yeah, you were one of the first QS writers.
Stop bragging.
I wrote for QS before QS existed. I wrote for DoublingSeason.com.
Well, hold up.
No more. Stop the dick measuring contest.
No, we're having fun reminiscing, Marcel. It's not dick measuring.
Who are the listeners
are reminiscing with you?
You guys were giving up some MTG finance history, man. We're going back to Pack to Power.
I remember doublingseason.co.uk.
Oh my gosh. You notice I'm not participating in this.
That's because Ryan's got nothing to say.
I've written nearly as long as you have, Corbin.
Meh.
Yeah, I wrote for the same website you did like 3 months after you did.
Yeah, I know. That's why it's fun to reminisce. Join in.
Yeah, no, I don't care.
Remember when Matina did Pack to Power?
Yeah, I remember when I did Pack to Power like the 3 times.
Well,
doesn't
you know
matter.
What? Man, Medina doing Pack to Power was a big awakening to me, so it's fun to reminisce
about.
You know what I was doing before Pack to Power?
Is it Pack to Power, Ryan? Tell me.
No, I was like an 11-year-old kid hustling the adults for their magic cards at my shop. Pack to Power was nothing new to me. Like, sorry that it didn't awaken
me. Yes, it was. It awakened because I've been playing Magic for a year and I was broke.
Yeah.
Ryan attacked Charizard with old Pokemon.
I actually did. True story.
Oh my god.
No, completely on accident. It's funny that you say that. It wasn't packed to Charizard, but
Was it bulk common to Charizard?
No, I took what was left over from a box of Magic cards I'd gotten out of store credit, and a kid up there had a Charizard, and he was like, I really want to get into Magic, and he was like trying to trade his Pokemon collection, and so I'd taken like the 3 or 4 rares I needed for my deck at the time or whatever, and gave him the rest of the box for that Charizard, which was worth like way more.
I did that
scumbag story before there was even an internet.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, like,
exactly.
I don't, I, I feel bad about it, but like.
No, you don't.
No, I do. Like, I feel bad about it now. Like, and my morals have definitely like grown over time. But like, as a kid, all you hear about is like all these adults. Like, and that was the thing is like all the adults at the shop I tried to go to were trying to hustle even kids like all the time. Like, if you didn't trade that way at the shop, you were getting won over.
Yeah,
and
it I was just the one getting all my scumbag stories are people like screwing me on trades.
No, like that's just how our shop was. It was like the 20-year-old guys who would just like try and trade with me at 12 and like would try it. Not, I mean, they wouldn't usually try and rip me off too bad. And eventually, like, I just learned that I had to buy my Scry as soon as it came out and start looking at all my prices.
Buy my
keep track
Scry
of what decks were doing.
Well.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
My day, we used InQuest.
Yeah, I think.
Oh,
was
man.
We liked InQuest.
Yeah, there. I just date myself right there, boys. I had Scry, and every year there was one issue that would come out, and InQuest did the same thing where they would put every magic card in there. Because a lot of times they just hit on the like the good cards
was,
or whatever in each set
issue
as
it.
Your price guide. Oh, okay, you're right. It was the InQuest.
Because it was four sets, yeah.
No.
Got
no. I'm talking about like even up through like 7th edition. That's how I would do it. Like, you
I
didn't
see.
Have a smartphone.
Needed interesting. I trade magic cards for Pokemon cards all the time. My Pokemon cube always needs more.
It's weird that my life came back around to like me getting into Magic Finance because I can fully thank Magic Finance as being a kid for like my memory skills and stuff like that for sure. Like, I studied prices as a kid, so I knew them when I went to the card shop because I didn't want to pull out the Scry while I was there. Like, I just pretended.
Now that
like
would be embarrassing, am I right?
Well, I mean, for a 12-year-old kid, like a lot of people did that. That's how people traded back in the day. Like, you literally just pulled your Scry out just like you would TCG
He's
player.
A trade
oh,
rare,
that
rare,
sounds like the worst. Oh,
it is.
You know what? No, the second that's probably faster than pulling out your smartphone going, wait, I got to connect to the Wi-Fi. I don't have the signal.
Why can't I find it here?
and you'd even have people like trying to do competing sites. Like, there'd be one guy trying to do his InQuest pricing versus one guy trying to do, like, it was just like people wanting to use like, you know, a big name retailer versus TCG player, something like that. Like, it's crazy. The way it used to work. It all mimics.
On this podcast, man.
We scared away everyone.
But like, no offense against Star City, but I don't necessarily feel like they need to be the gold standard. Like, I don't feel like I need to say StarCity.com every time. There are plenty of other websites out there where if I want to go search a magic card, I can do so.
Well, I knew we'd draw Ryan into the reminiscing. That's all I got to say.
No, I'm not reminiscing. That's the thing is like my reminiscing stories make me feel bad. My reminiscing stories was like me being a broke kid with like a pretty broke household growing up and not having a lot of money for any of my hobbies. And if I wanted to play Magic, I learned how to hustle kids for their cards.
Right,
that's my reminiscing. That's not great.
Grew up on a dirt farm where the only crop was dirt. He had 17 cents a week allowance that he saved up to buy a pack of Ice Age. And his rare was Jandor Saddlebag.
He bought a box of Fallen Empires. It was disappointing.
It's not even an Ice Age at cards in 4th edition and Arabian Nights. That's how poor he was. He had to buy a pack that was sealed with tape.
It's also in 6th edition. And
he bought Chinese counterfeits before they were cool.
Oh my gosh. You guys are terrible. See, like, that's the thing. It's like, I'm going to be the butt of the jokes because apparently, like, I'm old man fogey at 26.
Well, only when you date yourself that way.
That's not me dating myself. Like, this is back in the day when, like, Ogre was working for Troll and Toad. And, like, you just...
Yeah, that means a lot to all of our listeners, I'm sure, who know both Ogre and the history of Troll.
No, honestly, if people don't know who Ogre is, they should. Like, go read some articles. Like, you want to tell yourself you're a real Magic Finance person? Unless you don't travel at all, you should know some of these personalities, because you're going to accidentally sit down across from Ogre, and if you know his face, it's much better because you'll walk away with your cards.
That's a pretty good description.
I love Ogre to death. He's a good guy, but like, I'll sit down and trade with Ogre, and it's a little different now, like being in a different position.
Yes.
But like, I don't want to be a rando.
I remember the first time I traded with Ogre.
Yeah, how'd you walk away?
Like,
I mean, I did okay because after I got like 10 cards in and realized how bad it was going, I was like, I should probably speak up, but this man's 7.5 feet tall, so...
Yeah, it looks like an ogre.
I sat down with him, he's like, anybody want the peanut? And I'm like, oh, no.
Oh, man.
I trained with Fezzik. He threw a rock at my head. He's like, I'm going to have to miss.
Well, we'll see if he listens to this podcast. We'll find out about that by next week.
That would make him smile. Whatever.
It would.
Ogre would laugh. Yeah.
He's a giant teddy bear. That's the thing is, like, most people don't realize about it. But it's like knowing those personalities and knowing that that's what Magic Finance is. Like, there's a history behind this just as much as there is behind Magic playing. And, like, all these guys were on the floor doing it real, like, in the late 90s, mid 90s, grinding Magic cards because they realized, like, these are the pioneers. These are the guys you never hear about. And, like, those, you want to talk about reminiscing. Like, those are the guys I grew up around as a kid and, like, watched them do it. And, like, all of them either own their own stores or work for stores now. Like, that's the only reason I have a lot of connections is because,
yeah, the,
like,
guys that were picking Moxes and Lotuses out of the trash can at Gen Con 93.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even to say that he has to go that far back. I mean, there's people who didn't get into it in the mid 90s, 95, 96, and still are, you know, you just, some of those people have just spent their entire lives devoted to Magic. I mean, that's 20 plus years that you've put into a game. And I've put that much into a game, but part of it is a kid playing, you know, Magic wasn't all I did. And so, I don't know. Sure, you want to talk about reminiscing? I'll pay some homage to Magic. This game's fantastic. It's giving me a different lifestyle. It's giving me the opportunity to travel, eat at restaurants that most people only dream of, and going to locations and hanging out with friends. Like, you know, living the real life. Like, Las
Vegas. Brian never would have gone to Japan without Magic. That's legit.
Oh, absolutely. I was broke. I had no money as a college kid. I had to, the only reason I got to go is because a local guy was so cool, who's actually my landlord now. So cool, and gave me the money I needed to be able to go over there on, like, an indefinite loan pretty much. And, like, I owed that guy for the rest of my life. But yeah, Wizards paid for the rest of my travel, and I was able to go to Japan and play on the Pro Tour because of Magic. And I still wouldn't have traveled to Japan in my life if it weren't for that.
Well, awesome. Magic is a great game. It's a great community.
I like how we're making
brings
the
us
case.
All together. Yeah.
We're making the case for Magic the Gathering to
no,
people.
Every, hey, hold on. No. God, every once in a while, you just
why are you guys constantly cut me off in the middle of me talking? Like, I...
Because
you're like, hey guys, Magic's pretty cool.
Marcel, you were probably trying to say something important.
No, he was trying to segue.
All right, let's move into the email this week. It's your favorite part. I know how much you guys love the email. This one comes to us from a concerned listener. And it says, hey guys, I'm a concerned listener, and I'm concerned about the price of alternate art Ugin on eBay. Tell me, what do you think the future of this card is? Question mark. Thanks, a concerned listener.
Can I abstain?
Price check.
He's a concerned far too many times for me to want to take him seriously.
I'm concerned by how concerned he is.
That was a 100% real email, I promise.
I mean, what does he want to know? What is he concerned about?
What price should he pay?
No, he told us he's concerned, but he didn't tell us what he's concerned about. Like, I'm concerned that this guy doesn't have an idea about what's going on.
I'm concerned for this CERN, even.
I'm concerned for this fictional person I made up in their email, too. But no, I mean, let's talk about alternate art Ugin and something that is not just a price check for Jason. We see that over $100. Whereas the normal copies are $30. The promo one is not a foil. I mean, a lot of people do want the card. Do we tell them that it's going – is this like San Diego Comic-Con promos where they started at $100 and you're like, yeah, I don't know what will happen. And the next thing you know, they're $400? Or is it going to come down?
I am not sure on how many are out there. Is this – I mean, until we get a count, is this rarer or is this easier to find than San Diego Comic-Con promos? And the additional question is, San Diego Comic-Con promos are for the most part a collectible. I mean, people do play them. I see it on occasion, but usually, like, you're playing one or two of those Planeswalkers in your deck at most anyway.
They're cube staples, sure.
But that's like a full set of them, right? It's not like you're buying the set of Planeswalkers.
Right.
Ugin, there's never a time when you really want like three to four of those sets for the most part. This Ugin, there's just as many, but there's only one card you're talking about, which means you need multiple copies of that Ugin if you want to play.
So
I think that I would have to say that if there are double or less Ugins, that Ugin should be higher than one of those should be higher than the majority of those promos combined.
Oh, that makes sense, yeah.
But I don't know the count yet.
So the $200 price doesn't bother you, do you think?
No, not a bit. I don't care. Like, I don't know why people care. This guy shouldn't be concerned. You know why he shouldn't be concerned? Because anyone who wants an Ugin can still get a $30 Ugin. And anyone who wants a $200 Ugin, if they don't get their $200 Ugin today, then they shouldn't be concerned when it's a $400 Ugin in 5 years.
That's actually a really good point.
Like, that Ugin, if anything, will minorly drop the price of what a regular Ugin can sit at, because there's going to be a couple people out there who open their Ugin and they don't need to go buy a regular Ugin. So that every copy of that until they decide they want to get rid of them, or they can just trade that one and pick up more Ugins.
I have to imagine affect
the ceiling on the foil price, or is that like even more pimp?
I think that what
I mean, the foil is $80 and the, you know, the alternate art's 200. I mean,
but
it's like if you're pimping out a deck, you're probably foiling the deck.
No, right. These are two very different people that are two different crowds. They're like, the collector isn't always looking for foils. The collector is looking for the coolest. So they want these Ugin promos. Or I hear a lot of standard players who like don't even normally pimp out decks, but are just like, you know what? I'm going to sink a bunch of money into my standard cards right now anyway. I have to go get Ugins. Regular Ugins are probably going to drop. Like I have the money I'm going to trade anyway. If I pick up these three Ugins, I'm playing alternate art ones. Cool. Because in 2 years, I'll be able to sell them for more anyway. Yeah. Rather than my regular Ugins, you know, like have probably depreciated it, or you like haven't gained a ton out of them.
What we can say about this is I think maybe the alternate art one will probably maintain its price outside of rotation a little bit more than the foil, maybe?
I think you cannot look at this card on a rotation schedule. I think that for the most part, rotation isn't going to do much to it. But I also don't think that rotation is going to help its price any, because there will be the people who, like I was saying, who are just going to play with these during standard. And some of those will drop them as soon as rotation happens.
Oh, yes, the FNM grinders.
Yeah. I mean, sure.
He's stuck in that troll so well.
I still really don't understand why you guys don't get that.
There is an FNM grinder. He's just messing with you. You fall for it every time.
I mean, it's hard not to fall for it. I'm pretty bad
at beating the trolls, but so are you.
It frustrates me though, because it's not even a troll. Like, it's an actual thing.
No, but the way that you presented it, if we go back to episode 100.
Oh my gosh.
I listened to Ryan's clip about the FNM grinder. And it's classic. Like, it'll make it brought tears.
I probably wasn't sober. I mean, that's like saying,
excuses.
No.
It was Timmy, the FNL grinder. It was so bad.
Oh my god. If Jason gets to brush up from Manticore like this while he was trashed, then I get to brush up.
The funny part was the fact that you used the Timmy, which is a known psychographic that they use for other things, and then
it has nothing to do with that for him.
Yeah.
It was just a good night.
No, oh. I just call a lot of things Timmy. I wasn't like,
oh,
here we go. Yeah. Okay, back to
it's actually just like a thing that I do, but no, it was bad context when Magic does use the word Timmy.
While we're on the alternate art Ugin, I guess there was a big controversy because on Modo, they had the Ugin packs, but at first they had no alternate art Ugin.
It's true.
And people went into an uproar about it.
Oh, they were not happy about getting 5-card packs full of poop that were non-transferable. Yeah, that's not a prize. Wizards of the Coast.
But who cares? Who cares about
They were given in lieu of prizes. That's literally like they Walmart being like, hey, we're going to pay you in Walmart store credit from now on.
They were not in lieu of prizes. You got your packs, and these were in addition. They were just like the Ugin packs where if you win your pre-release, you'll get your prize packs, and then you'll get your Ugin pack.
All I'm going by is a very angry tweet from our friend the Booze Cube, who said that he got, instead of prizes, got a bunch of those Ugin packs. He was not happy.
I think that was maybe something that was an isolated incident, because that's not what people were complaining about. They were just complaining that there was no alternate art Ugin in those packs.
I'm just upset that I opened 20 of those packs and got 0 Ugins. It was very sad.
The packs were selling for $10, so you could have sold those 20
packs. No, don't worry. I screwed up in every way possible. I also took the commons and threw them into the common box with everything else.
Hey,
I mean,
anything that's
unprecedented. Like, we are not wizards. We're good at MTG Finance because we look at past trends and spend a lot of time studying what has happened historically and use historical evidence to predict future events. But anytime there's anything unprecedented, we're just as clueless as you are, and that's why we can make mistakes sometimes. So.
And I'm stupid, so that played into it.
Honestly, there are a lot of people like, oh, he's stupid, but I don't know that they would have done anything like super differently if they were in your position. So, like, we just, you know, it was impossible to predict things would go that way. So
yeah, it just feels bad looking in retrospect, because the owner was like, hey, Corbin, we got these extra Ugin's Fates packs. Are they worth anything? Should we, like, keep them and try to sell them? Or do you just, like, want to open them? And I was like, I guess I'll open them. Maybe we'll get an Ugin.
Yeah, and get an Ugin.
I got blown out in every possible way on that decision.
So speaking of Ugin, and a good way to tie this all together, if you want to retain and gain the best value you can out of that Ugin, because it's going to obviously be like the figure piece of that collection of all of those Ugin cards, pick up an entire set. You don't necessarily do it right this moment. I think the cards have a little bit more they can drop, but we're at maximum supply. You're never getting more of these. Pick up an entire set. That will be worth a lot more down the road than just the Ugin itself. And it will be an easy way to move all of those extra commons that you already probably have. So just finish out your set, sit that in the closet for 3-4 years, and you'll make a pretty good return on that.
Damn.
That's going to be something very unique.
Boom.
Finance 101? Are we going to move into Finance 101 now?
It was Finance 101.
Yeah, it was Finance 101.
I'll call that Finance 101. Let's talk about the Pro Tour, though.
Because who knows what they're going to do with the next pre-release. There'll probably be something like kind of weird, time packs or something goofy.
Well, yeah, I think the takeaway is that if something is very rare, you hold on to it. I mean, I hope I've learned my lesson.
If you know when the thing comes onto the shelves, when the end of that print date is, and it is like the first run of whatever it is all they're getting, buy that. That's all you need to know. Like that there is no trend otherwise, and so far that it said otherwise.
Well, how about we do this then? Let's move into Finance 101 into card rarity. And I don't just mean by, you know, the average rarity that you'll get, you know, common mythic rares, but also like with print runs and how earlier print runs were, where you could get a rare from an earlier print run is like a mythic now in the current print runs. Do you guys want to talk about that?
Yeah. I mean, I think probably just taking it in the simplest terms first, the way it used to work is that before we had mythics, all rares were printed on the same sheet. And while you had the same odds to get any rare, this led to a lot of your middling rares that today would be like $2 to $4 would be $10 back then. And your, you know, some of your more expensive rares would be like, you know, $25, $30. Now we see where you can sometimes have these $40, $50 mythics, because of the way they changed the print runs, but it is offset by the fact that, you know, your scry lands out of Theros, some of them are $2, $3, $4 instead of $10. So just that's kind of the way that rarity has changed. Print runs have changed since the mythic rare came out.
I think in a good article to read about this, maybe we can put it in the show notes if I remember. But if not, Google Rares the New Uncommon by Anthony Capace. I think that's a very good resource for a little bit about this phenomenon. Like as print runs have increased, even since like Lorwyn Block, we've seen print runs really increase. So like pre-mythic, non-mythic rares, well, I mean, obviously if they're pre-mythic, they're going to be non-mythic, but like some of those have the same scarcity as a post-mythic mythic just because of how much print runs have increased since then.
Yeah. I mean, you have to keep in mind that Magic has just been showing steady and in some cases extreme growth over the past 5 years. I mean, it's like, it's hard to think of like Innistrad as something as old because it's like, oh, that was only a few years ago, but the game continues to grow and like, stuff like that just gets expensive. Once you've been playing for a while, sets don't feel like they were that long ago, but they have been. And once you calculate in how much the game has grown, suddenly those cards are a lot more rare than you feel like they should be. Something like Spell Pierce is a great example.
Yeah, if you look at like the number of copies of that card versus the total number of players per game, you know, a rare back then would be like, you know, there's like maybe one Snapcaster per 2,000 players versus, you know, one Voice of Resurgence per 250 players or something like that. So like that rarity, even though the rarities are the same, scarcity is different.
Yeah.
Then you get sets like Portal that some people may not know about where you have these cards that are look extremely basic but are worth lots and lots of money because of the rarity. And where do you guys play with these cards? And like, is this partially where we get the evaluation of Ugin so wrong because you try to compare to these limited sets and we just have no precedent?
Well, the stuff like you talk about Ugin, I think it probably is closer to something like your San Diego Comic-Con promos where a very set amount were created. And I think that's, you know, it's a little different case because they weren't actual sets, right? They're just one-time throwaway promotional things. But yeah, when you talk about those older sets like Portal and you know, Portal 3 Kingdoms, stuff like that, you just get these absurdly expensive cards because they were printed one time forever ago and they weren't reprinted. So stuff like that is just really rare. A lot of those cards, they get, you know, overlooked or whatever because they've obsoleted them with new cards or reprinted them or whatever. But that stuff's so old that when it's not been reprinted, it's just so hard to find. You almost never find that sort of stuff, you know, in the wild. It has to come from a store if you're going to get it. So, I mean, that's how you end up with randomly very expensive cards from 15 years ago.
Bam. Finance 101. So let's move on to some other stuff.
Boom.
Pro Tour?
The Pro Tour, yeah.
The Pro Tour.
Oh, yeah, that thing happened. Pro Tour, the modern Pro Tour happened. Pro Tour Fate Reforged. It occurred at Washington, D.C. Last week. We had Ray Perez, Sander Vanderzee was there, representing the Brainstorm Brew Crew. KYT and Bloody Mess Jess was there, representing Canada.
That's legit. I'll allow it.
Okay. Okay. What is representing hashtag Canada. Things that Marcel says, hashtag. Oh, man. I mean, what did you guys think of the Pro Tour? Was it as, I guess, wide open as you thought it would be? Or were you disappointed by all the burn in Obzon and Siege Rhinos or what?
I'm actually always stoked to see burn do well. And here's why. Not because burn itself is like the deck that you want to be, you know, the pillar of your format or anything. But because if burn is winning, that means that there is nothing happening that is too completely unfair. And what I mean by that is, like, no one's gaining infinite life right away. No one is comboing out on turn three for the most part. Because, like, burn can't really interact and beat a lot of those decks. And so that really means that, like, yeah, I think burn is a good representative. Like, how well you can do with burn in a general metagame is how healthy that metagame is as far as fair strategies go. Obviously, Legacy is a little different because there's plenty of combo going around and stuff. So you can't always judge based on that. But I think for modern, like, that's a good measure. And I think it's fine. I think that there was a lot of people who had preconceptions going into this and didn't have enough time to test a lot of new decks. So you see a lot of people on things that were already good. And I think burn is kind of one of the natural progressions. That's where me and Ray had kind of come to with testing. He's audible just because he said that there was a lot of the cards being bought out for anti, you know, burn sideboard and stuff. So it kind of scared him away from the deck. But I think burn was a good option just because if you're not comfortable with the new format and you're not a person who's been playing modern on a consistent and steady basis, then you want to be on something where it's maybe not as forgiving, but if you're a person who can play tight lines of play, your lines don't necessarily vary so heavily that you have to know every deck in the format to know how to play against them. You just have to know your deck well enough to know how to, you know, 20 your opponent.
Right, and burn's certainly very consistent.
Exactly.
I mean, in terms of, you know, there was a lot of Obzon, and I know people complain about Siege Rhino or whatever, but there were actually several flavors. You know, people thought, oh, Black Green X is just automatically the best deck. Well, the things that we would call Black Green X, you kind of think about like your, you know, your Dark Confidant Liliana builds or whatever, those weren't even the – you had a lot of green of Obzon decks that were basically green-white decks that splash black for Siege Rhino. So, I mean, even though you look at it and say, oh, it's just a bunch of Obzon and Burn or whatever, it actually – you know, there was enough variation there that you had your Wiltleaf Liege decks and your ones that weren't that – you know, I consider that pretty good. I wouldn't say that all of the old archetypes or whatever, you know, before – cons came out are alive and well, but I mean, people played Living End at the Pro Tour, and that would have never happened, you know, before the bannings, and it would have just been a bunch of Delver across the room. So I don't know. I mean, that's our only premier level event for Modern for a long time here. So I mean, we'll move forward and see where the format goes, but you know, it seems like it's in a pretty good spot. I think right now, especially if we can come out of a Pro Tour where you have the best players in the world playing the format and nothing is broken. You know, we just had a solid range of decks. I think that's not a bad sign for Modern. The real question is if they bring a Modern Pro Tour back next year.
Yeah, that is the question. And honestly, I wouldn't mind seeing it not come back, even though I do want to see it. But I mean, the way that they're going to have the rotation with Standard, I think it'll be worthwhile to keep that. That's the way to go with Pro Tours.
What were you saying, Ryan?
No, sorry, I didn't mean to try and cut you off there. I was just saying, I think that the people who really want modern are the people who are vocal online and not the actual pro community. From what I've heard, and like Ray was talking about this today when I was talking to him, he was saying that like most of the people who are on the pro tour and really like modern are the people who were like playing Birthing Pod before, and they liked modern because they put so much time into Birthing Pod and that stuff. Like these pro tour expert or the modern experts, they were, you know,
heralding. Modern has never been a favorite of the pros because it changes very little, whereas standard changes all the time. So pros, and when you talk about teams, stuff like that, they want to be able to get an edge before pro tour. And if you go into modern where, sure, everyone may be able to play their favorite deck, but there's not necessarily going to be anything new, then that's not really something that benefits teams with better testing, stuff like that. So, I mean, the pro community as a whole, I would prefer standard. But the outcry from the public was so great, and that's why we got the modern pro tour back.
See, another problem for pros is card availability. See, with standard, you can bring pretty much most of your standard collection to wherever you are to go test, and you can build and tweak around with your decks. Well, with modern, you got such a large card pool, you're not going to be able to bring all your cards to be able to test these weird interactions in different decks. So, I mean, it does create that strain upon teams, and then it benefits those teams that have greater card availability. So, you know, I think standard would probably be better. And I think just by and large, you know, it also will put less of a strain on the format. I mean, I think the arguments for it is I do like seeing a modern pro tour, but at the same time, it'd be better for Magic in general to go all standard.
Yeah. And I think one of the interesting points brought up by Tom Lapilli on Twitter was that you want two things for like having a pro tour and getting the best players in the world on a format tends to lead to having it solved fairly quickly. And that's not exciting from a viewer's standpoint or from a coverage standpoint or anything like that. You want new stuff. You want change. You want to be able to show off new cards. So those things kind of pull at each other. If you have, you know, constant high level competition for an eternal format, it's going to change very little. And it's maybe not necessarily exciting from the outside looking in. Whereas if you have standard, it changes drastically every time a new set comes out. And it's a lot more appealing as a viewer. So, but I mean, all in all, modern, I mean, it was fun watching Modern Pro Tour. I mean, like it or not with the Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time Bands and all of that, it was certainly more surprises at the Pro Tour than there would have been if everyone was playing Delver and Birthing Pod.
Yay. No more Birthing Pod.
What, speaking of one more topic, I mean, what do you guys think about the new movement on Siege Rhino? I mean, Constant Tarkir is the most open set in the history of Magic. Siege Rhino is a rare from it that was also available as a pre-release promo. It's still being heavily drafted, and the price has climbed up even more. I mean, it was $4. It's now almost $8. The foil has spiked from $15 a month ago to over $30 now. Is this real? Like, is it going to stay this way? Like, what do you guys think?
I think so. It should be, because it's being shown that Siege Rhino, especially the foil, it's modern playable, and you might even see it in Legacy. The card is just that absurd. So it's a standard. It's going to be a format player, and it's going to be played of as a four of in modern, three or four of. So, yeah, I guess you got to get your foils now, because that's going to be the price.
It's so weird, because it is something that will obviously be impacted by rotation, right? And it wouldn't be a surprise to see it in, I mean, I don't remember what the new schedule is for event decks or, you know, clash packs or whatever. I mean, but I would expect to see it in some sort of standard supplemental product in the next 12 months. So I don't know. It's hard to say. I don't think that there's a lot of upside at $7 for a regular, $8 for a regular copy and $30 for a foil. I think it'll be cheaper before it's more expensive, but it's also hard to say that it doesn't deserve the price, you know, given how strong it is and standard and modern now that Burn is a big deck and it works great with Noble Hierarch because it makes your Siege Rhino bigger. It's just so good. It's hard to say that the price is wrong, but at the same time, historically, it seems hard to match. It seems hard that it can hold this price.
Nah, I mean, I would have agreed with you had it not already like wavered so far in price before and then come back up. I mean, I think there's definitely a chance it's going to drop again, but I'm pretty sure this time next year it's going to be close to the same price. And I think the time after that, 2 years from then, it'll be the same price again. So I think Siege Rhino is going to be a pretty consistent $10 plus card at some point.
Do you think that this gets wrecked by rotation?
No.
No.
It's a 4-of in Modern. I'm sorry. It's a 4-of.
It'll dip.
It's not going to get wrecked. This is going to dip.
It's not going to get wrecked.
Well, no, really, do we think this Snapcaster good, or is this something like Deathrite Shaman good?
It's not quite Snapcaster good, but it fills all of the holes minus Legacy the Snapcaster does, and it being, it's a 4X in Modern that's played in like more than one deck, because there's a couple of variants of that deck. And on top of that, it's going to be included in every cube.
No, but it's
not like a commander card unlike Snapcaster.
What
so there's
price
that.
Graph do we look at? Do we look at the price graph of Deathrite Shaman or Snapcaster Mage to kind of see what will happen at rotation?
It's probably not getting banned in Modern ever. So
yeah, that's a good point.
It's like the definition of fair.
It's the fairest card ever.
So good. Just so fair.
Is the fairest good card ever? Or almost broken?
Real talk, it's a creature that costs 4 mana and has a good ability and good stats. If there's anything that will be more obsoleted, it's this at some point in the future, right? It's a creature. If there's one thing that keeps getting better in Magic, it's the creatures, you know? So like,
yeah,
it's hard to say that 3 years from now, this is still going to be, you know, top of the line. Cause there's lots of cards that 2 years ago were good in Modern that now can't cut it because they just print better stuff. Or you look back even like 3-4 years ago, cards that you would have said, oh, this will always be a 4-of in Modern that now can't cut it. Something like, the 4/4 white Jotun Grunt, I believe the 4/4 for 2 mana and white was a card that used to get played a lot in Legacy and Extended.
That was an archetype dependent card.
Keldon Marauders. I mean,
sure.
I'm just pointing out that there are cards you look at and you would have thought would have never been replaced that have been replaced. So
I understand, but it's hard to say
long term.
Yeah, and it's a 4-drop, and there's always good 4-drops coming around. But Siege Rhino does something that is very impactful in the game for exactly what that deck is looking to do. Like, so it's a very difficult card to replace, because even if you print an equally powerful card, like, Siege Rhino is pretty, it gains you the life you want, it hits your opponent when you can get them low, like, there's just so many good things about that card that it's perfect for those
decks.
Just
print a similar card in 2 colors.
I don't see it happening. It's so good, though.
A similar card, 2 colors. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we would have said the same thing 2-3 years ago about other stuff.
There's other things that are lower on the totem pole that's going to get eclipsed before Siege Rhino gets eclipsed. Because when we get to the point where Siege Rhino is getting eclipsed, that's the scary part of creature creep.
Yeah, that's 3-4 years.
I mean, or maybe Burn becomes less a part of the metagame, and then that life gain from Siege Rhino isn't.
No. Burn is not the reason that Siege Rhino is good.
No, of course
Siege Rhino
is
good because Siege Rhino is fucking good.
It certainly plays into it, right? Like,
I mean, kind of. Like, it's certainly a problem for Siege or for Burn, but like, that's not really why you're running Siege Rhino.
No, it's absolutely not. But I'm just saying, it's hard to predict cards like this long term, like medium term, 2 years, like. Great, I'm all over it, but it's hard to say 5 years out this will never be replaced. Like, if Burn becomes not a part of the metagame.
Nobody is saying 5 years out it's not going to be replaced. We were saying like 3 years. Like, I said 2 years from the time it rotates, which is a year and a half away. That's 3 years. 3 years from now, Siege Rhino will still be played in Modern.
And I bet its price will probably go up from where it is now before it goes down because it's either obsolete or, like, the metagame has moved on or it gets...
Yeah. To me, it really does feel like I don't want to pick them up now. I want to pick them up at rotation.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
I also
absolutely.
Think it's highly likely that this will be in a standard supplemental product. So.
I bet it dips a little.
I think so, but I also think that there is a good chance that the Abzan and Abzan Aggro and
Obzon.
All the different Abzan, sure, whatever, Obzon, all of your Obzon variants are going to kind of set into this position where, like, Siege Rhino at a couple of tournaments, it'd only take like 2 weeks in a row for this to happen, where 6 of 8 decks have Siege Rhinos in them. And that's not to say that that's going to happen or be consistent, but because of the way the metagame is and how wonky it is, it can just be a week where Obzon is really well positioned, and so you have 6 of 8 decks, the top 8. Well, there's already been forward movement on this card. Everyone's going to, at that point, go, because when it was a $2 or $3 card, everyone's just like, well, it's underpriced, and people were buying them, but they weren't just to the point where they were like, oh my gosh, this card is so powerful because everyone associates a power level with price, I guess is the way I'm trying to like say this. So people were saying, well, Siege Rhino's $3, it can't be the most powerful card out there. But when Siege Rhino's a $10 card, everyone's going, well, Siege Rhino is absurd. That's what there's obviously it should be a $10 card. So people actually are more likely with that mentality right now to allow the price to go higher than they would when it was a $3 card, because everyone will make the excuses of, well, it's in cons, it's doing all these things. Like the reality of it is, as much as we want to put an emphasis on all of these like factors that we have, really what it comes down to is the metagame breakdown right at that point. There are cards that are $20 one day in standard and $10 again the next because they do really well for 2 weeks in a row. And that has right. nothing to do with supply or demand. And I think Siege Rhino is one of those kind of scary cards where it could hit $20 while it's in standard because for 3 weeks it's dominating a format.
Whew, I don't.
There you go. That's
high. But yeah, I agree with your point.
Yeah, I agree that's high. Boros Reckoner never should have been $20. Snapcaster, I mean, Snapcaster's really good. But like, look at Boros Reckoner now, that's a $2 card.
Yeah, but it was only 30. It was expensive for the month after the set.
It was $15 for most of its life in standard.
Right now. Yeah.
It was $10 to $15 for most of its life in standard, at least.
Well, yeah.
And it spiked to $20. That's what I'm saying. Siege Rhino could do the same thing. Be $10 to $15 for most of its life in standard and spike to $20 at times.
I don't think it'll go up much from where it is now.
Let's stop talking about Siege Rhino. That's enough for one card.
That's my pick of the week, so let's just keep talking. that's incorrect. Do we want to move on to pick of the week, fellas? Do we want to let Marcel say it's time to move on?
Do we want to introduce the other thing that we want to talk about? Boys,
yes.
Do we want to release it to the public? Release the beast?
Release the beast, he says.
Garrick, man, plus one.
Okay. So Ryan, announce it. Let it be known. You're the beast out here. You gotta be the beast caller. Bring it in.
The beast caller. I don't know how to introduce these kinds
of caller of beasts to continue the
But Garrick Marcel, thing. You got that lovely voice. All right. So, we have finally got our ducks in a row, and by finally, I mean that we've spent some time on this, and we have a Patreon up. For those of you who do not know what Patreon is, think of it as, I guess, a kind of a form of Kickstarter, except rather than utilizing the money to put ourselves forward and like that, we are looking to be able to essentially get donations based on when we put out the episodes and stuff like that. And we want to use that to further our content. We are really looking to like push into doing streaming, all these things we've been talking about, and we just don't have the time or the money to do right now or can't pay someone to do. We really want to kind of push that forward with our content over the next year, 2 years, and you know, keep the Brainstorm Brewery brand growing and not just be a podcast that, you know, comes to your beautiful ears once a week. And not only that, but we also want to be doing more things ourselves, YouTube videos and stuff like that. And the reality of it is we have busy lives and we need to be able to find the resources to make this happen.
So basically our pitch is, you know, with the financial advice we give people, we feel like we're valuable to you because we've made you a lot of money over the years, either having you not pay too much to continue to play your decks or maybe some of our specs have hit. So if you think you've gotten financial value out of the podcast, we'd like your help maybe paying some of that back to us so we can expand our offerings and, you know, just be a stronger brand going forward.
Well, I mean, we're certainly not trying to make any money ourselves here. We're trying to pay the great writers on our website, that's for sure.
Yeah, because one thing, we'll let it be known out here, we have not made a dime off this podcast. We have had sponsors, and all that money has gone to supporting the website, our writers, and other ways of making tokens to give out to people and, you know, contributions to the community. So that's something that we've always done. And Brainstorm Brewery is always going to be free. The website's always going to be free. You don't have to worry. There's never going to be a paywall. This is just, you know, if you feel you want to support us and you feel you like what's going on, you know, drop a couple dollars. There's some rewards there for people that stay committed to the supporting us on the Patreon. And there'll be some, a segment coming up that will include people from the Patreon. So we'll have that all on there on the actual Patreon. You could look it up and the different rewards and whatnot. And figure out where you want to be if you want to support this. And again, it's all up to you. If you want to do this, you can. And if you don't, you don't have to opt in.
We've been talking about this and working on this for such a long time behind the scenes. It feels weird to, you know, to finally have it out there. But we put a lot of thought into the goals and the milestones and stuff like that. And we really hope it's stuff that we don't want it to feel like it's a handout. We want it to feel like we're, you know, we're going to be able to provide the content to deserve, you know, whatever you guys feel like contributing. So we're looking forward to what this will give us the opportunity to do moving forward.
Yeah. So anyway, on a lighter note, picks of the week.
Pick of the week. Time for the pick of the week.
Who wants to go first?
I have a controversial one.
Okay. Uh-oh. Jason, you sound like you have one ready, so do it.
It's controversial. Okay, so it's not controversial in a bad way. But this is a card that is in free fall. It's really tanking. Now, okay, the card is Chalice of the Void. Now, Chalice of the Void spiked, like, well beyond where it should have, because when people were playing those Delver, Cantrip, Treasure Cruise decks in Modern, Chalice of the Void on one was amazing. Like, you nuked all their Cantrips, you got their Delver, like, it was just real hard for them to, you know, to do stuff. They could get the cards in the graveyard for Treasure Cruise, but like, you know, they're drawing into more spells they can't play. But when Treasure Cruise was banned in Modern, everyone was sort of like, I guess we don't really need to go as hard on Chalice anymore. What I'm predicting is, I think that the Affinity decks in Modern could switch a little bit closer to what Frank Karsten is running. And Frank Karsten has two Chalices main and two in the board. So a full set. I think Chalice continues to be one of the least fair cards in Legacy. Chalice is just a very, very, very good card. And I don't know that the price it spiked to is necessarily correct, but I don't think the price it's plummeting to now is necessarily correct.
I mean,
I think you watch Chalice until it rebounds, and then you probably want to pick it up because it's very good going forward. And the reason more people are going to play Affinity is because we know that Etched Champion is in Modern Masters too. And I predicted based on that we're going to see Mox Opal in Modern Masters 2, which will make – if Mox Opal's in Modern Masters 2 and they print as much as I think they will, that makes Affinity a very, very affordable deck. And having Chalice to go in the Affinity deck is going to be very good. So I think even though that there's a slight risk of Chalice being in Modern Masters 2, I still think the price it craters to is probably a good pickup price. And there are people definitely looking to trade these off.
Okay,
so this is a good trade target, and I think once the price like craters and starts to rebound a little bit, and we know where the floor is, I think that's when you buy in.
So Jason, it spiked to the highest it ever reached. I mean, it was a $5 card 3 months ago or whatever. The highest it ever reached was $25. I mean, it's like a $17 to $20 card right now. The price has not gone down honestly as far as I thought it would. I mean, you really want to get into this card?
No.
Where do you think it's going then? Because it's been steady.
Well, okay,
anytime
a card like goes up, it's not going to go down to its pre-spike price. It usually ends up around twice its pre-spike price. So if this ever hits like 9-10 bucks, I think that's a pretty good buy-in. Like, yeah, we're going to wish we'd bought in at 5. Don't buy in at 18, but 10 seems real good. I just like watch it, but like, I know that people want to trade out of these and they're not going to expect to get 18. They're just going to want to try. Like the people that bought it 10, 12 when it was going up, they're going to understand they can't get 25 for it. Like that ship has sailed. You might want to wait on this a little bit, but like honestly, this is a card to watch. And I'm saying that just because it just started to be tech in Modern in the Affinity decks. And Affinity is going to be a very, very good deck, both post-banning and post-Modern Masters too. So this isn't a card you're going to want to like look into this week, but this is definitely something that it's a card I've got my eye on, and I wanted to talk about it this week just because of how much how excited I am about Karsten's Affinity deck. I guess like this is one of the cards I'm really excited about, and I hope it gets cheap enough.
Okay, so we all saw the Amulet Bloom deck, not just at the Pro Tour, but at some events before that as well. So I think a couple things are true about that deck. One, that is absurdly complicated. Most players will not be able to play it. And two, that it has some pretty good price targets. Obviously, people have looked at Primeval Titan and Amulet and all of that. What has kind of got swept under the rug is some other very important pieces, mostly talking about Summer Bloom. Now you say, oh, it's been reprinted a bunch, but I'm going to tell you the five sets it's been printed in. Portal, Starter 99, Visions, 6th edition and 9th edition, as uncommon. Those were all a very long time ago. And this card is available for $1.50.
Really? Because, I don't want to contradict you, but I've definitely seen the price on three of the printings show up in the daily, like, cards that spiked this week.
It's gone up. Like a, it's gone up percentage-wise, but it's gone up from about $1.50 to like $2 as of today. Like these are still available under $2.
Okay.
And that to me is extremely appealing because people will get around to making these for the deck if they want to make it. Now, I don't know how much the deck will catch on, you know, mainstream because it is difficult to play, but I think that there's enough to move to for some movement on ninth edition and older. You know, that's honestly, it's a long, like ninth edition is
probably
whatever,
the best one.
Yeah. I don't, yeah. And I'm not sure which one you necessarily want to be in necessarily. The Visions ones are more expensive, but they are black bordered. You know, I don't know, but I think these are something to keep an eye out for. If you can find them under $2, you definitely trade for them, and I'm buying it cash at $1.50 to $2 is probably fine too. I mean, I don't think this is a card that's going to go huge crazy. I do think it's a card that could theoretically be reprinted to Commander product, stuff like that. So it's certainly not without some risk, but at the same time, we've seen uncommons for much newer sets go in one deck, go to $5 plus. So, you know, I would not be terribly surprised to see this card double up over the next few months.
It spiked before. It'll spike again. Next time there's a modern PT, I guarantee someone's going to play an Amulet Bloom deck on camera. Because this is literally the third time someone's played Amulet Bloom at a modern PT, and all the prices, all the cards in that deck have gone up. You know, and then they sort of settle down again, and then everyone will remember, oh, this is, you know, this is brand new tech that we're seeing for the third time. So honestly, if you can't make a ton of money, just sit on them. They'll spike again, and you'll be in the very, very enviable position of someone able to list your copies for sale right away on TCG Player as opposed to people trying to buy them for cheap and hope their order doesn't get canceled. Well, the next time this spikes, you want to be sitting on copies. So I'm with you.
Yeah, and you don't want to get in, like, Amulet of Vigor, Primeval Titan, the ship has sailed on that stuff, you know, so I like the smaller targets.
So my pick of the week is going to be for paper.
What?
Ooh.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a correction of the price, because the online price is already starting to go for Outpost Siege. This is the Red Siege. And paper, I think you can get them for, like, about a dollar, a little bit under a dollar, and I think this is more like a $3 to $4 card. Maybe. Just because of the, it gives the card advantage. And actually playing against this card and against, you know, a red-white control deck is kind of impressive. It's almost like a Phyrexian Arena in a way. Yeah, you don't get to keep the card in your hand, but you're getting card advantage for in red consistently. And in a slower deck that can utilize the multiple turns and get the card advantage out of it, I think it's going to be worthwhile. And it's going to be a player in standard. And yeah, a Siege is actually a good card in standard. This is something that we all completely wrote off in the set review. So, yeah.
It's one of those cards that even if it's a little playable, you know, it's sort of like maybe two decks playable. It's like, oh, some cards have to go cheaper. So it's probably like a buck. So I can see some upside. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see it three. People pay that mana cost for Liliana, or I'm sorry, Chandra, and then just activate the ability that this has on it every turn. So this is like a much harder to kill Chandra. So, you know, in the sense that that's basically the only ability people used on that Chandra. So I don't hate that pick at under a dollar.
Hear that, Marcel? Corbin doesn't hate your pick.
It's all right. That's good enough for me.
Well, it's one of those that could never, you know, we see lots of cards.
I was stretching for
a pick. I think it's pretty good. No, I mean, I think it's fine, but.
It's a card people are talking about and there aren't a ton of copies. We're not at peak supply right now, so.
It's just dangerous because it just looks and feels like part of a card that like can be played and be a dollar, like Aetherling, you know, something like that. But it could also easily be $3 or $4.
Well, this isn't going to be a one of like Aetherling, so it's got that going for it.
Right.
Trade away for him at a dollar. You're not going to be mad.
Absolutely. Ryan, what do you got?
My pick of the week is a card that is showing up now in sideboards again. It's been something I haven't really been wanting to be on for a while, but I think Serac Dragonclaw has finally hit the basement. He is a dollar. He should not be anywhere near a dollar. He is a 3 of in a number of sideboards now that are kind of cropping up. Tamir Aggro definitely got a boost with this. Frostwalker. I'm all about that card in standard right now. As ridiculous as that is, the 4-1 for 2.
Yeah, Jeff Hoogland's all over that card, and he did pretty well with a teamer deck recently.
Yeah, I think that it's a real strategy. Even if it's not the best thing out there, it does not take much to get Serac up to being, you know, suddenly a $10 card, a $5 card.
What's
he's a mythic.
What's the foil price on Serac?
$5.
Right, wow, that's really cheap too. So the thing is, like, even though the foils are going to get played in EDH, if the non-foil price goes up, the foil price will go up too, irrespective of, you know, the foil needed to be played in standard. So I think you might want to get your foils too, because if the non-foil goes up, the foil price is going to go up too, and like you'd be like, ah, shit, those were just $5. So, yeah, that's good too. I'm with you, man.
All right, excellent. Glad everybody's on the same page.
What do we say on this podcast? I don't hate that.
Yep.
What about See the Unwritten? That's a card we're all raving about, and that's under $2 right now.
Yeah, I don't know if the strategy is there for it. You want to be casting Ugin on your high end. There's just no creatures that, I mean, sure, Hornet Queen's great, but you gotta be putting in a deck that have 4 power guys, and I mean, you can do it for the value, but it's expensive.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like Serac because you can instant speed him, and I think control's becoming a more and more popular thing, and this guy's dangerous. Like, control's not super stoked about seeing him.
I'm actually building Serac Dragonclaw in EDH too. Like, I just want to put that out there. Oh, I just really like his ability. You know, he's in the right colors to do that, those kind of shenanigans, and stealing their dudes and beating them in the face with their own dudes is a lot of fun.
Hey, we got tokens that have Serac, actually the skin of Serac on a bear that killed Serac in our 2/2 bear tokens that we have on brainstormbrewery.com. You'll find them there.
Is Serac the dragon punch guy?
Yes.
Or bear punch, sorry.
Yes.
Like, he's the guy who punched the bear in the card
art. Savage punch, yes.
Yeah, he's not going to take a bunch of guff from some bear.
Sure. Good to know.
It takes some galls.
Some galls? It's going to take galls! I don't know why a 6/6 would be intimidated by a 2/2 bear anyway. Or even a 4/2 bear, like they have in...
yeah, in cons.
I'm a 4/2 bear. Yeah, sure you are. Whatever. I'll punch a bear. I'm a 6/6. I'm bigger than a crawworm somehow.
He's huge, man.
Well, there we go. That's the end of the podcast, right?
Sure.
That's our last episode? Yeah, I could see that.
Let's end it.
We're sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We're going to retract that Patreon. We're going to get back all the money.
Bad picks of the week. We begged for money. I think it's time to call it a night.
Is that what you do every night, Jason? Is that what comedy's about?
I don't beg for money.
We can be found on GatheringMagic.com and BrainstormBrewery.com.